Good afternoon and welcome to the conference call of HSH Nordbank. At our customer's request, this conference will be recorded. May I now hand you over to Mr. Günther Fiemers.
Yeah, thank you very much and welcome to you all for joining us on this investor and analyst telephone conference on the announcement of the 2013 results. I hope you all had time to download the information which we put on our website earlier today, which is in particular the press release, the investor presentation, which we will go through in the next few minutes. It's also the annual report for the group, as well as the annual report on the German GAAP. It's now, as we have done in the previous sessions, our CFO, Stefan Amisch, will walk you through the presentation, and afterwards we will have ample time for your questions. And now I'd like to hand over to Mr. Amisch, please.
Yeah, thank you very much. Good afternoon from my side. I will immediately start with the 2013 highlights, and I refer to this publication, to this presentation Günther Fiemers referred to. If you please take page number 3, this is the so-called the condensed description of the highlights. First, business performance. Yes, we have a very negative result with 560 million euro loss on the group income before taxes side. It's negative, but it is fully expected and planned. We had a plan of minus 600 million euros outlined last year at the same time with our planning process. And this was, please take this into mind, the basis for our decision to reinstall the guarantee and therefore to increase the capital last year. So therefore, we are very consistent in our delivery related to our planned targets. Nevertheless, this 560 million euro was heavily burdened by two aspects. First, very high loan loss provisions for the shipping industry, which we have done in the fourth quarter especially, and the increased guarantee expenses. We have to pay for the guarantee a lot of money. That's fine. It's a statement, not a criticism. It is as it is, but we take all related, let's say, state aid compensation bookings through our P&L in our operative result. The compensation of state aid takes place within the P&L and not as dividend distribution. This is of utmost importance to understand this, because otherwise you compare apples with oranges when you compare us to other banks who also are suffering under state aid compensation processes. The net income after tax was furthermore, let's say, burdened by additional affected high tax expenses for legacy portfolios. In December last year, I made a press conference outlining that we have digested and with that, let's say, that we have elaborated and investigated on these dividend arbitrage transactions of the past. We discovered that we, with a very high likelihood, did something wrong in the amount of 127 million euros. We took this as a provision, and we had paid it out to our tax authorities very proactively and with total transparent behavior in the course of the early days of this year. The core bank generates also a small loss last year of 106 million euros, but this was only caused by the risk provisions to take place in the shipping finance portfolio of close to 500 million euros. Excluded of this effect, the core bank is well performing with 212 million euros profits. This is for us so much important, because this is the clear signal that the core bank is performing. And also, is performing in line with expectations and positive. It's driven by the new business of last year, which was increased by 12%, close to 8 billion euros. The portfolio quality of our new business since 5 years is very positive, and at the same time, income and risk parameters have improved. Total assets overall could be reduced, by 22 billion euros to 109. This was, again, an enforced, let's say, from ourselves, enforced a contraction of the balance sheet in order to condense even more the quality of the bank to a much better metrics. The capital and the guarantee, yes, we have increased the guarantee or the capital. You can take this similar. The guarantee is nothing else than our capital position. And we targeted to increase our core Tier 1 capital ratios, and we delivered this. That does mean the core capital ratio at the year-end 2013 stays at 16.9%, including all mechanisms related to the guarantee, which is by itself a very strong capitalization key performance indicator. When we now translate this Basel II or Basel 2.5 definition or core Tier 1 defined ratio into the Basel III world, which we actually are doing, we have a fully phased Basel III or Basel III ratio of 12.8%. I think this is strong. And the Basel III, a fully loaded compared figure is 11.7. That does mean well above the 10% target number we always outlined as a long-term target for the bank on the Basel III fully loaded basis. Total capital ratio stays at 23.8%, which is also pretty strong. The guarantee expenses last year was 900 million euros running through P&L, not as dividend payout. It's important. This is one reason why our P&L is so much in the red figures, as planned, by the way. 900 million euros, of which 70% is borne by the restructuring unit. Again, the repayment of state aid, this is nothing else than the guarantee expense at HSA Bank, has to take place as operating expense according to the European Union decision back to 2011. A new ratio, which is may eventually of interest for you, but for us it is of interest, therefore we are outlining this, this so-called new world of bail-in regime. We thought it might be helpful to tell you that our bail-in ratio, according to ECOFIN, is 16%, including clearly the mechanisms of the guarantee. You know that the threshold of ECOFIN is 8%. We have 16. That does mean if you exclude the guarantee structure, which is senseless because it is there, but if you would do, it is still at 9%. That does mean the capital quality and the capital position of the bank is very strong under Basel III and under bail-in methodology. Liquidity and funding stays pretty good. The Basel III liquidity coverage ratio is close to 200%. Which is an expression of our emphasis to foster our liquidity position very much. On the page 4, we have some aspects outlined related to state aid proceedings and asset quality review and EBA stress tests. The state aid proceedings we expect to come to a final conclusion at year-end 2014, maybe earlier, but I give you my personal expectation. I believe that the European Union or the Commission will take time in order to wait for the asset quality on the EBA stress test results, which take place, as you know, for sure very much in detail, which will take place in late summer, early winter this year, according to our information in October. Are we well prepared or not for this process? We believe yes. We, first of all, substantially increase our risk provision well ahead of the AQR. In the fourth quarter 2013, we have done so because we have changed and adapted our long-term prospects to the shipping industry to a much more conservative stance. We still believe that the recovery will take place in this industry, but we have to take notice that external advisors told us this recovery will take place a year later than expected, and therefore we have to take the related or the triggered risk provisions from this side. The non-performing loans are covered by high-risk provisions and collateral, which we believe is sufficient. And therefore, we assess ourselves, but we are not the auditor at this point, and we are for sure not the ECB, but we believe we are pretty well protected for this towards this process, because we have strong capital ratios with a wide margin from AQR threshold, which you know is 8%. We have today a 12.8% Basel III phased-in capital ratio. The EBA stress test is related to the methodology for us, a closed book. We don't know yet how the methodology will work. We have to wait for further new information from the ECB and from the EBA, which are up to come in the next weeks or months. Again, here is the same. We have good threshold. We have good resilience in our capital position. We have a lot of Core Tier 1 capital. We have the risk weight of our senior tranche within this guarantee structure is in these days very low, gives us a lot of room for resilience, and we have additional fee buffer installed, which has to do with the guarantee costs of the year 2013. When you look to page 5, a little bit look into the future. More or less all set, but one thing not. We outlined last year, a year before, that we expect a heavy loss 2013 and therefore have to increase the capital. We exactly delivering what we have forecasted, more or less on spot. And we always said already a year before that we expect for the year 2014 the return of HSA on group basis into the black figures. In May, we will publish our first quarter results, and today we give an outline that we approximately target around 200 million euros profit before taxes for HSA Bank for the first quarter 2014. The year started pretty well for us. We could further increase our core bank's net new business, which is 100% better than a year before. So that means this core bank is under steam. People are working, clients want us, and we try to increase the share of wallet within our markets, and we do this successfully. Page 7 shows these numbers I did try to refer already to. You see that, okay, I will not repeat all informations here, but maybe, again, a look to the capital ratios, which are 16.9% under Basel 2.5, which related to 12.8 under Basel 3, substantially increased towards last year. The bail-in ratio on the right side of this chart is at 16%, all in all, which again is well ahead of these thresholds of the ECOFIN logic and much better than the year before. The next two pages I would like to overjump, only a smell here. Our income generating capacity last year was pretty good. The net interest income isolated from this one-off effect of last year's hybrid capital effect was plus 5%, which is, in our point of view, a pretty good achievement because it's not that easy in shrinking markets and a high liquidity position of corporates to increase our lending volume. The margin was better, volumes have been a little bit weaker, so overall we are more or less, let's say, happy with this outcome. Net commission income was never a strength of HSA Bank, and I guess for the time being it will never be a strength, so therefore it goes down related to this, let's say, concentration process of business volume. We try to a little bit to improve this slightly, but we take our time. We are not under hurry here or in hurry to make faults. Risk provisions I come later into detail to. Next page, page 9, the revenue side continuation here. Net income from financial investments or the trading income and trading income are much better than the years before, but this has not to do that we do own account trading. We don't have prop trading. It's forbidden. We've closed this since years. But we have portfolios of the past, which the bank suffered so much under in the financial market crisis in 2008 and 2009, where market prices collapsed in this field. And now, 4 years later, or 5 years later, it is the opposite. That does mean markets are gathering yield, pushing in liquidity into these markets again. You know this much better than I. It's a hunt for yield again in the markets, and we have positive revaluation effects now on our side. So after having years of heavy damage, now we have years of happiness in these portfolios. Administrative expenses has been successfully worked down by 11%. This process is positive and will continue because we are for sure not at the end of a heavy restructuring process of the bank. Page 10 is outlines again this so-called legacy portfolio, which in these days produces positive results. This corporate investment portfolio has been 20 billion euros in size some years before in the peak of the financial market crisis. Today it's 6 billion euros in size, and now simply related on the booking lines is it trading or financial income. Overall produce positive gross income. Against this we have some compensation effects through the guarantee, because these are covered portfolios by the guarantee. In bad days we are benefiting from the guarantee. In good days we are therefore have to book something against the guarantee back in favor of the guarantee. So the net P&L effect was still 170 million euros, which is important for us in last year. The next slide shows you the impression of our core bank, which is doing on a clean basis, clean of IFRS-related, let's say, exceptional items, producing positive numbers. It is a little bit weaker than the trend before, because still risk provisions are hanging over also on the core bank in the shipping portfolio. And if you allow, if you extract the provisionings, the risk provisionings for the restructured shipping loans in within the core bank, we have a 212 million euros pre-tax income, clean of shipping risk provisions in the core bank, which is fully in line with the positive development of the quarters before. The restructuring unit is, was, and will be in the negative numbers for the time being. Page 13 shows you, as an overview, how the split between core bank and restructuring unit is, simply by visual digestion here. You see that the restructuring unit takes a decent proportion of the bank in terms of revenue, in terms of expenses, but also for sure in terms of loan loss provisions. 60% of all loan loss provisions of last year are borne by the restructuring unit, and by the way, the restructured shipping loans in the core bank still normally should belong to the restructuring unit. The guarantee expenses are triggered largely by the restructuring unit by close to 70% of this 900 million euros. 616 are for the restructuring unit. And I think these are the messages I would like to give here with this chart. I would like to point your attention to page 15. This is a breakdown of our portfolio in order to show you which part of the portfolio is covered by the guarantee. I think this is important. The guarantee was installed in the year 2009 to a so-called reference portfolio, which was in the old days much bigger. Today, simply by to start with, the exposure at default of the bank was 114 billion euros, and you see this in these colors. 61% of this portfolio is covered by the guarantee, and 50% is covered by is not covered by the guarantee. And then going forward, you see that in the shipping industry, we have an exposure at default, to explain the graph, of 25 billion euros, of which 20 are covered by the guarantee. This is the logic of this slide. It should simply give you a transparent view how and where the guarantee kicks in and where not. The same in the, let's say, breakdown of the rating categories between investment grade and default grades, and in the middle, the non-investment grade, does show you that over some 80 to 90% of the total portfolio of the restructuring unit is, with some deviations, but covered from the guarantee. And therefore, the idea of the guarantee was always to protect the bank from risk. And now, some years later, the portfolio went down, but still it works very efficiently to protect the bank from risks. Page 16 is a split down of our risk provision exercise in the year 2013. The total net risk provisions before the guarantee mechanism is, as you know, 1.6 billion euros, which is a huge number for us, an expression of the difficulties in the shipping industry. And only for the shipping portfolio, we have booked last year 1.3 billion euros net risk provisions. This is a massive number, which we had to do, we wanted to do, and we could book this because we have a strong capital position behind. Again, this was the reason for the reestablishment of the full guarantee amount. The rest of the portfolio is more or less, as you say in your own language, nothing to write home about. We have a very positive credit cycle in corporate and real estate and other activities, also with other banks and also with HSA Bank. The guarantee itself is explained in the next slides. I would like to overjump 17 because it should be familiar with you. I refer to this reference portfolio which has come down, and the effect of the guarantee is it's a capital-related effect and a risk-absorbing effect. The capital is reinforced through the or fostered by the guarantee because risk-weighted assets are getting down, and therefore, on the other side, is improving our capital ratios. If you may have a look, please, to the structure of the guarantee looking forward, we have to look, this may be something very special with HSA Bank. There are many things which are very special, by the way, but one thing is super special. We have to take into account risk provision forecasts until 2025 in our today's P&L. I'm not sure if there are so many houses around us or competitors who are taking a balance sheet view on 12 years risk provision forecasts. We have to, in the way that we have to target a long-term loss model from the bank. You know that the guarantee structure kicks in on top of the first loss piece, which is borne by the bank, the 3.2 billion euros. Everything is well known from you. I know this, and it's nothing new here. From this 2.3 billion euros today, 780 million euros are settled. So still room to go within this first loss piece. Between 2019 and until 2025, we expect, according to our model, that we need to take 1.6 billion euros out of the guarantee as physical capital for us, as loss-absorbing capital, a long-term view. This is a little bit higher than last year estimate. This stays and stood in the last period as 1.3 billion. It went up at 300 million euros according to the restated or recalculated shipping market risk provisions effects. And now the question is important for us that we have to answer the question, we have received state aid and we have to compensate state aid. That's fine. We accept this. There's no criticism behind. But the matter of fact, I would like to show you with the page 19, what does it mean for our P&L? This is important to understand our P&L. We have on the right side of this chart expressed what we understood as state aid. A, it is the capital increase based back in 2009 of 3 billion euros. There's no doubt this was state aid according to European understanding, or the Commission understanding. And second, we expect to take from the taxpayers' account in 2025 another 1.6 billion euros as loss-absorbing capacity. So all together, we talk about 4.6 billion euros, so-called state aid, which we have to pay back. And we have to pay back this through guarantee expenses, which are running through our P&L. And as of today, we have run through P&L in the years from 2009 until 2013 in the amount of 3.1 billion euros already. And we are in the middle of our restructuring process. On top of this, there's a footnote, another 500 million euros, which has to do with a special transaction. But forget this at the moment. 3.1 billion euros. Of this 3.1 billion euros, you need to divide into two pieces. The first piece is what we are paying cash out to our guarantee providers, also to the guarantors, which are the countries, our shareholder. 1.7 billion euros is cashed out already to our major shareholders who gave the guarantee. 1.7. Another 1.4 billion euros is booked as provision, as a so-called war chest or saving account for us in the days where our capital position is ahead of 10%, which is the threshold provided by the European Union. When we are better than 10%, and we have a reason to book this guarantee additional, this Zusatzprämie, additional premium, then all in all, we had booked already 1.4 billion euros of those premiums, which are running through P&L, operative expenses, but are not cashed out. And now, when you look into the future, when our capital position goes back towards 10%, we had 16.9% last year, we are going towards 10% on Basel 3, we are getting these amounts back into P&L. This is the mechanism which we try to explain here with this arrow, which hopefully gives you a little bit of an understanding of this. This is the first thing I would like to mention. Already 1.7 is cashed out to the guarantors. 1.4 billion euros is a war chest of the bank to prepare the bank for days when the capital position is not 16% but maybe 10. And now I would simply close this remark on the guarantee with one further argument. Again, this 3.1 billion euros P&L burden was not paid as dividend, as an extraordinary payment underneath, let's say, the net income. It was booked as normal operative expenses. Gives you a little bit an understanding why our P&L looks a little bit different from other P&Ls in the industry. Page 20 is the explanation of these risk provisions. I think you are familiar with the mechanism. Here, 1.6 billion euros net risk provisions covered by the guarantee brings us to a P&L item of 880 million euros risk provisions, and I remember again here of this 1.6 billion euros, which you see on page 20, 1.3 alone is for the shipping industry booked in the fourth quarter. 21 is already discussed. 22 is something which I believe is also of utmost importance here, is the reconciliation with Basel III. I mentioned the figures phased in. We are at 12.8 with a good cushion inside our structure and fully loaded Basel III as of today at around 11.7%, which is for us as HSA Bank and I must say as a German bank, a very strong capitalization, which we believe is sufficient enough to cushion us from AQR and EBA stress tests going forward. The non-performing loans are staying at page 23 and here outlined are very high related to our legacy, related in principle to our shipping portfolio of the past. It has nothing to do with the new business since 5 years. It's well covered by the guarantee, but the numbers are as they are, 16.4 billion euros. The core bank has 4.7 of this, the restructuring unit 11.7. The majority of these things are borne by the shipping industry and are in total covered in a pretty substantial way by risk provisions in total of 6.3 billion euros alone for the total non-performing loan portfolio. Of the shipping industry falls 3.3 billion euros risk provisions alone. We believe we are pretty good covered with risk provisions towards our non-performing loans. Our sovereign risk on page 24 is overseeable with €1 billion. I think does not create any headache as of today. I would like to close my presentation with a view on page 42 and 43, because I found and we found that it may be fruitful to talk a little bit about bail-in ratios, because this is a new logic of investors enforced by the regulator and, let's say, the government in Europe. They want bail-in in the event X, and now we need to take care of and need to outline. We cannot discuss away. We cannot eliminate the discussion of bail-in, because bail-in is something which the law setter is enforcing, in theory. But we need to find an answer to you. What is the probability of a bail-in for HSA? And this is what we try to outline with these two charts. 42 shows you the mechanics of the ECOFIN. Fine, this is for all of us the same, for all banks in Europe. But in addition, as a cushion for HSA Bank, we have the guarantee, which stays before the equity position and the subordinated capital. Before. That does mean it's a loss-absorbing guarantee before equity capital and subordinated capital. And therefore, if you look to page 43, we did try to bring this on one page with this bail-in ratios. It is all in all today up to 16%, including the guarantee. The guarantee relates to a big portfolio of the bank, to this reference portfolio, which with a very, very likelihood is the source of potential risk provisions in the future and risk losses. And therefore, this guarantee kicks in into this calculation. With the 16%, we are well ahead of this, above this threshold of the resolution fund or the ECOFIN logic. And if you even exclude this guarantee structure, which you may not because it is there, but if, in theory, we still are staying, excluding this guarantee, above this 8% threshold, and we today have 9% capital bail-in position. I thought this may be of use for you. So I close my presentation, and I'm ready to take some questions of you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touchtone telephone. The operator will announce your name when it's your turn to ask a question. In case you wish to cancel your question, please press star 2. So for your questions, please press star 1. For your questions, please press star 1. The first question is coming from Dirk van Roon. Your line is open.
Yes, I had a question about the status of the existing hybrid investments, such as RESPARK's 8% and HSHN 725 perpetual.
Yeah, the status is unchanged. It is it's there. Yeah, we have reduced these book values in the last year. We had last year already in the year account 2012 announced that we will start to pay coupon again in 2018. Yeah, nothing changed. This is the status. No new status.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
The next question is coming from John Reuter. Your line is open.
Hi. One question to start off is looking at the incremental provisions and then just comparing from the full year financials, the collateral that you had against your loan book as well. I mean, it actually looks like the collateral coverage as a percent of the assets ticked up slightly, and yet the cash coverage has gone up as well. Can you maybe just address sort of what you saw on the collateral side within the shipping book, or whether this was just, you know, a protective measure to get out in front of the AQR?
I try, yeah. That does mean we increased last year the provisions by 1.3 billion euros in the shipping market, related or triggered by a updated, let's say, assessment of the future outlook of the shipping industry, which we believe will recover, yes, but later than expected. Therefore, we need, first of all, to take care of the provisions, and for sure to take care of the collateral. That does mean if we prolong the expectation of recovery, we need to check if the cash flow expectations of our collaterals are in line or not in line. And therefore, we had to work through both items. And there where we book provisions is an expression that we expect lower collaterals in the future. And therefore, we have, let's say, written down our book to around 60% book value, yeah, when you take this close to 40% provisions which we took against the shipping portfolio in total. Within the 60%, we believe we are well covered by our collateral. Yeah, this is what I can say to you at this point.
Okay, so if I understand that correctly, it's sort of you guys are looking at your cash flow projections, comparing that to maybe the mark-to-market collateral that you're getting from ship brokers,
exactly.
And that might lead to, you know, an incremental provision based on that delta.
Absolutely. This
okay.
Is, absolutely. You outlined this much more precise than I do. Yeah, I could. Yeah. Thank you.
Sure. Okay. And then in thinking about NPLs, obviously, you know, depending on which jurisdiction you're in, everyone talks about how they have the strictest or quirkiest definition. But one thing that you've disclosed in the past is that, you know, you keep restructured loans in your NPL for 1 year. Is there a sense of how much of the of the NPLs that you disclosed represent restructured loans that are currently performing but, you know, are in the penalty box?
No, I think I have not this in my mind. I need to find this out. I have it not here on the table. So I keep this here with me, yeah, and Jürgen Fehmers will address this later to you.
Okay, but directionally, has that gone up? Just from observing the market, it seems like
I'm a bit surprised by your question, because for me, that all non-performing loans are restructured loans. Yeah, I would assess and assume, but maybe Günther, you can help that.
Well, I think your question points to the fact that we keep a restructured loan on probation for at least 1 year to see whether the restructured loan plays according to the new rules. And only then we would shift it back to the, let's say, living portfolio and take it out of the non-performing. And you now want to know how many of those restructured loans are working properly fine but still are labeled NPL because they are still in this one-year probation period. I have to dig out whether we have any tangible numbers for that.
But
okay.
I guess this change from non-performing to living portfolio, this ratio has not improved last year, I'm sure. Yeah. It says,
okay.
Yeah, it says it need to. Obviously, it has deteriorated. Yeah.
Right. Okay. I was just thinking, you know, given the amount of restructuring activity over the course of the year, and even in the fourth quarter, whether there's been some deals that might result in sort of a transition out. Anyway, from your disclosure as well, you talk about your goal of at least 10%, core common tier one capital at the end of 2014. Obviously, your slides show you're starting off with, well, depending on if it's fully phased in or phased in, you know, 11.7 or over 12. And it did look like in your prior slides you had your Basel III fully loaded with the buffer at still closer to 10%. So it looks like that has improved slightly this quarter. But also, if your goal is profitability next year and then you're saying, okay, we're going to be at least 10 when you're starting with, you know, a lot higher than that, can I interpret that as you guys saying, look, you think you have excess capital, you're not lending against it because you're trying to be conservative in advance of the stress test, but once you get past that, there's ability to, you know, expand the lending and put more of that capital to work. Is that the right way to think about it?
This is one explanation. I think, first of all, for us, we are fully concentrated here in the board of the bank to surpass 2014 successfully. Yeah, this is our priority number one. There is no other priority. Therefore, because we are a little bit in the edge in the media, we have this shipping portfolio, and we did try and do try to take care of a always sufficient capital position. Yeah, and even if it's we are overcapitalized, let's say compared to the past, we are heavily overcapitalized for sure. Yeah, but I guess this is the situation for many banks in Europe. Yeah, I believe that a high capital position is needed when you have a lot of risk in your portfolio. So it's a simple expression for myself, but it's a clear correlation. As long as we have the shipping market in trouble, as long as we have uncertain expectations to the shipping market, we will stay with a very strong capital position. In the day where we see the recovery is kicking in of the shipping industry, and we are sure it will come, but we don't know when. Yeah? At this point, we need to think about maybe a more precise fine-tuning of our capital position. But it's not the time to talk you through at this point. This may be the time in 1 or 2 years from now. Yeah.
Okay. And then one last question for me. The taxes, I mean, I know there's a slide explaining. I'm just trying to understand if we look at next year and you talk about, you know, core income pre-tax, what should we expect the effective tax rate to be next year?
Let's say a normal tax rate. Let's say in principle you can always take into account, let's say, a third of the pre-tax profits over a sum as a rule. Yeah, should be in the P&L. This I think would be not wrong. Yeah.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next question is coming from Corinne Cunningham. Your line is open.
Afternoon. Thank you for the call. You mentioned you're expecting to be profitable in the first quarter of 2014. I think that is largely a change to IFRS reporting. Do you expect that profitability to be carried through in the rest of 14 and into 15, or are we more likely to be weighed back down by the guarantee charges into the red ink again?
Hello. No, I think we made this comment or this we gave this forecast already a year before from now, in 2013, in April, that we expect a black number 2014. And not for the first quarter, but for the full year. And we reiterate this and confirm the statement. That does mean we expect a positive group number in total, for sure, affected by this IFRS effect from this from our premium structure, yeah, which I did try to elaborate on. That does mean we have booked something in our war chest in the year 2000 and in our saving book, so-called, in the year 2013, and we will get something back from this saving book, which we created ourselves in the year 2014. This is not a new structure, it's still the thing how it goes. We will have some first and some substantial effects in the first quarter. I outlined that in total we will have 200 million euros pre-tax profits. This is a first guess. The numbers will get published late May, but this should carry on through the full year.
And
also 2015, we expect not red numbers. Yeah.
Okay. My other question was about Tier 2 debt. If you're still in receipt of state aid by the time we get to 2017, which I guess you still will be, would you be allowed to redeem junior capital?
We in these days are not thinking about it because we first of all have to talk through our process with the European Union and with the ECB. But this is, in theory, a good idea.
Yeah. A good idea.
But we are allowed to, yes, but we are not executing in these days.
Okay, thank you very much.
The next question is coming from Lukas Boljaric. Your line is open.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking the call and for the presentation. I just wanted to follow up on an earlier question, which was asking you about your Basel III capital. And basically, if I look at your page 22, you now seem to include the capital buffer from the debtor warrant in your fully loaded Basel III calculation, whereas in the third quarter 2013 deck, you seem to have excluded it. So I was just wondering kind of why is the data warrant now included in kind of fully loaded Basel III calculation? Thank you.
We did not exclude this, but it was smaller. That does mean in the third quarter or the September results 2013, this capital buffer from the debt warrant or the additional fee, this proportion was smaller. Yeah. And now we have calculated this much more precisely, and we have incorporated all related effects on risk-weighted assets and P&L at year-end 2013 with the full year's numbers. We've made this projection forward. It was always the same. That does mean we have this capital buffer from the debt warrant, and we have the guarantee buffer itself. That does mean which gives us some resilience. This is, by structure, has not changed.
And sorry, just then to clarify, so in third quarter, you basically had a 2.4 billion effect from going on phased in Basel III to fully loaded Basel III, and now you have kind of, now the difference is only 1.1 billion. So the difference is, what is the difference, or what is driving that decrease?
I think it is always made on the level of, let's say, understanding and the details knowledge at the time of the presentation. And maybe in September, we have today a more fully picture on this transaction. As in my point of view, I need to check this. I will do so. Nothing substantial has changed in our logic. Yeah. But
okay.
I need to find out, to be precise. I cannot answer this here out of mind, but it has nothing changed substantially compared, in the logic, substantially compared to the third quarter 2013.
Okay, I'll just follow them separately, okay. I guess, with Gunther to clarify this. No, thanks for that. And sorry, while I have you on, just one very basic clarification. When you guys are talking about core equity tier 1 Basel III phased in, kind of the 10% in which you show kind of in light blue, this is going to be a very obvious question, but I just want to make sure I fully confirm it. That's all equity, right? There's nothing else included in that.
No, it's just our core tier 1 capital.
No hybrid.
Gotcha.
No,
super.
It's just clean off these old things, no? It's clear Basel.
Exactly. No hybrids, right? Okay, super. Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you.
The next question is from Tom Jenkins. Your line is open.
Thank you very much. I just wanted to go back to the Tier 2 debt. I mean, obviously, Corinne's asked the question, great minds think alike, but I had a couple sort of in addition to that. Let me just clarify this. You said that you haven't had discussions with the regulator about final redemption of those bonds at the supposed redemption date, in, for example, once Corinne mentioned, in 2017. Your intention, I guess, is hopefully to be able to redeem those at par at that redemption date, but you cannot confirm that. Is that correct?
No. Hang on. There is an obligation for us to redeem the bonds when due, and which is in 2017. There's no doubt.
Okay. Good. I just wanted to clarify that because I kind of slightly misunderstood then. And then that also then leads into a question which I got. You've got, again, roughly $2.5 billion, including those bonds, $2.5 billion of Tier 2 debt coming due until 2017, you know, $1.5 billion by the end of next year. How's your thinking in terms of replacing that vis-a-vis maintaining a 16% bail-in ratio, or are you just thinking, okay, well, we'll redeem those bonds, some of them are obviously under the old G&A guarantees, but we'll redeem those bonds and maybe let the bail-in ratio slip below 16%. If you could just run me through how you guys are thinking slightly on that sort of dynamic.
I think the dynamic is, first of all, if you may accept, we will not disclose this dynamic. That does mean we are thinking in these days a lot how to handle our balance sheet, how to handle our capital position, how to handle the discussion with the European Union, and how to prepare ourselves towards the AQR and the ECB stress test.
Mm-hmm.
Clear, the question of capital management activities is something we try to take care of, but if we do something, and the time when we are doing something is nothing for public discussion in our point of view, and we'll get made from ourselves in the right time. And we need to carefully prepare these discussions with all our stakeholders, which predominantly are outside of the bank, again, is the ECB in the future and the European Union. Therefore, we don't need for long term a bail-in ratio of 16%. Clear. If you ask this is by far an expression of somehow an overcapitalized position. But we want to have this ratio in these days because we are facing a lot of very substantial discussions on the future of the bank. But if we look a little bit beyond of 2014, maybe beyond of 15 for sure, we need to manage our equity base and capital base, also subordinated capital base, much more intelligent as we do today. Yeah? But how we will do this, please accept this. We think ourselves first, and then we talk about this to the markets.
Okay, thanks. But that's very, very helpful. But just to confirm that you do see it at least as an obligation to redeem the bonds in 2017?
Legally.
Legally. Perfect. Thank you very much indeed.
We have a next question coming from Mr. John Reuter. Mr. Reuter, may we have your question? Mr. Reuter, may we have your question?
I think he was already.
Hi. Yeah, sorry. Just a follow-up call on some of these questions. Sounds like some others on the call are confused about the sub-bonds. I mean, for me, you have the legal maturity date. But what you point out on these slides is obviously the huge amount of subordinated bonds that you have, $4 billion, which provides your total capital ratio at such a healthy level. And just going off of what your recent comments were, what do you think the right amount of total capital is? Obviously, all the focus on the core Tier 1, but, I mean, is the thinking that ultimately gets replaced with mostly senior debt or sub-debt, or what's the right way of thinking about it?
I think as of today, John, if I may say, we are happy with the ratio. Yeah?
Okay.
I think this is what I want to say. Long term, it is for sure not an optimized ratio. Yeah? But we believe as HSA Bank, in our given situation, we need to have in all dimensions a strong capital position to defend the credit to the outside. Therefore, as of today, and as of today does mean for the time being, we will have a big capital, total capital position, a good bail-in ratio, and a good Basel III Core Tier 1 ratio.
Right. And then on slide 43, though, when you show the chart and you have your bail-in liabilities and you show it, which is helpful, with and without the guarantee, clearly that touches on what the regulator's treatment of the guarantee is, but there's still the contractual reality of the guarantee, and you've obviously been making payments to protect creditors as well from deterioration in assets because you have the guarantors covering losses on those assets. So if I looked at those bars, isn't practically speaking the loss waterfall flowing to the guarantors before it flows
exactly.
to...
Exactly.
Yeah,
it should be the other way around. The orange bar should be at the very bottom and then come the others.
It is the same if you have to... thank you very much. A good observation. In 42, this is... the target of 42, of the page 42, was exactly to show this. First, we have the guarantee. Then it goes into the capital structure. Yeah? And therefore, it's good. We have made now hundreds of slides. Maybe we should refine-tune this, the optics of this slide. You're right. Guarantee came first, then the capital positions came second.
Right, and just to be clear, I mean, the regulators look at it one way, might treat it one way, it's uncertain, but the reality is you have this contract, and regardless of how the regulators, from a capital perspective, treat it, the guarantors are on the hook for the losses that under the guarantee contract that you have, and even if it doesn't get increased from 7 to 10, the 7 is already contractually there.
Yes,
this is our understanding, right.
Yep, okay, thank you.
Thank you.
For further questions, please press star 1.
Okay, I think I need to look a little bit to the watch because we have further discussions here within the bank on the day where we have announced our result. Before closing, I would like to thank Günther Fehmers because it will be, with a good likelihood, his last international call. With investors because he will leave the bank in summer. This gives me here the position to thank you warmly on your efforts in the favor of the bank and hopefully also in the favor of the investors to keep up the level of understanding of HSA Bank, which is so complicated, giving the guarantee structure and the legacy portfolios and everything. So, Mr. Fehmers, thank you very much warmly from our side, and I guess all participants will follow this greetings here to you. Thank you very much for your efforts, and good luck for your future. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I'll be around for another 3 months, so you can still reach me on the phone, and I will reach out to you and introduce my successor in the next few months. So I'll be around until end of June. Thank you all for listening in, and goodbye for today.
We want to thank Mr. Fehmers and all the participants of this conference. Goodbye.